Jean Russell, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being my guest. So, Jean, you were at Gathering. How did it all come about? How did you find yourself in Melbourne at the Gathering event?
Oh, well, it all started with a Come to Melbourne hashtag on Twitter. And David had tagged me with that. And I'd met him months and months before that in California. And so we started having phone calls about, you know, what would happen if a crew of us came to Melbourne, and that somehow, you know, kind of started to aggregate around this event. And then the event got named Gathering 11. So that was the conversations with Christine Egger and Vanessa Mimas and David and I, and a few other people joined in at different points in time. And then later Michelle James joined as well. And so I guess it was the plan from the beginning. Like, I came because of Gathering 11 and because of those conversations and the invitation to come to Melbourne, which was irresistible.
Yeah, I guess it seems to me like I wasn't at Gathering, and that was one of the motivations for doing this podcast series. But it seems to me there was this real momentum that was generated early on, and that sort of drove, or not drove people, but really sort of enveloped them and brought them along.
Enticed, lured. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think part of that is the seed of stuff that happened in California at Wisdom 2.0. And so there was kind of a collection of us that were at that event and went out to dinner afterwards. And there was a, you know, what would happen if we did something kind of like this in Australia? So I think that conversation was kind of started there, and it was, how could we make this better? How could we make this, you know, fit what we're doing, and kind of shine the light on some of the energy and entrepreneurialism and spirituality that's present there. Mm-hmm. So I was totally on board with that.
Yeah, it seems that like a lot of this stuff reflects stuff that you talk about the power of the network and things like that. You know, the power of connectivity and how things spark off very small things.
I had this moment of deep internal laughter when David shared with me some spreadsheet that he had of kind of themes that he wanted, you know, to think about or have present there. And I was like, wow, this is a lot like the book that I'm writing. Deep overlap here.
Yeah.
Which is great because it just felt like synergy. And that was one of the reasons that I ended up producing the video for Gathering 11 was, you know, what is an interesting way that we can present the stuff that I'm working on in a way that helps frame the event, because there was such an overlap there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So the video itself you actually created for Gathering?
I did. I mean, half of the video was created for Gathering 11, right? Because part of it is spliced pieces from the Symbionomics work, which I'm an advisor to that project. And so when I decided to do video based on input from David, I reached out to the Symbionomics guys and spoke with Alan Rosenblith and said, you know, I need to create a video and I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, we've worked together and I really like what you do. So how can we work together? And can I splice in some of these videos that you've got? And he's like, totally. And I'll help you put that together. So he did the interview with me. And then he put the pieces of his into it.
Yeah. Nice. I was just watching it this morning in preparation for our chat, and yeah, I like it. It's really cool. And I was going to ask you about how was the process like for you of creating that video?
Well, you know, these things, I would like to tell a story about how they were so perfect and we liked to design them and, you know, everything went off without a hitch, but it didn't go like that at all. No, I kind of had some sense of the script I wanted and was trying to find who could film this. And I was in New York and I didn't find anybody there. And then I switched over and I was in San Francisco, and my friend Jerry Mikulski and I went out and we recorded videos for each other. And I came back and I handed that to Alan, and he's like, no, this is not going to work. Like, the sound quality's bad. And, you know, your energy level isn't quite right in some of the pieces. And, you know, let's just record over Skype and see how that goes. You know, the quality's not going to be perfect, but, you know, for showing it online and for what you're doing, it'll probably be okay. You know, as a filmmaker, he was just not quite happy with the quality of that. But that day I just like, you know, had just taken a shower, ran downstairs, got on Skype, and, you know, knew what I needed to say from my heart, and just in 45 minutes had recorded this thing. And, so it went really fast once we got started. And then Alan just did, you know, magical work putting it together. And I did some of the design to get the little slides between. And, you know, I just have to give a lot of credit to Alan for really making it work, because I just kind of showed up and spoke from my heart for a few minutes.
Yeah, I think you can tell that as well, that it wasn't, that your part wasn't as perhaps polished and scripted as the others. But personally, I think that works, because you're speaking, as you said, from the heart, and you're speaking passionately.
Yes. Animated.
Yeah. So you actually launched the video at Gathering 11? Is that,
I
was
did.
That its first public viewing?
It was.
And so how was that? Was that like a nerve-wracking time releasing it, or what was the process like for you of releasing it and getting feedback on it?
I don't know if it was nerve-wracking. It was certainly, I was deeply curious. I was like, you know, here's me speaking from my heart, and usually I'm engaged in dialogue. Where I can gauge, you know, how somebody's dealing with what I want to contribute to the conversation, and I'm listening to them and responding to what they're saying. So this was an instance of, like, I've already recorded what I'm saying, so how are people going to respond to that? And it was just so enlivening to, like, look at the audience and see people's faces engaged. And then as soon as it was over and people had a chance to break to hear them talking about it, it was just like, oh, I've spoken something that resonates with people that were present there, and that was useful for them, and that just was really powerful for me.
Yeah, I think it. You said it resonated, and I think that's really true. In all the conversations that I've had of people that attended Gathering, you know, one of the questions that I ask is, you know, what was alive for you? You know, what was most valuable in terms of the concept and thinking? And nearly, well, probably everyone that I've spoken to has mentioned the concept of thrivability. Do you want to spend some time explaining thrivability? Particularly, I think a lot of people talk about resilience too, and perhaps, you know, maybe it's a semantic difference, but yeah, can you describe that?
Yeah. And some people say that I'm like the founder of this movement, and I'm like, no, I'm just the one willing to stand up and do a bunch of work around it, but it's emerging from many spaces. And some people are talking about thriving instead of thrivable or thrivability, but, you know, this urge towards something beyond sustainability, something that we can aspire to, is something that's on the minds and in the hearts of people already. And, I know that the word thrivability just gives a name to that. So to me, thrivability, you know, when I first heard that word, it just captured what society might look like if it achieved its highest potential. It's like, that would be thriving. And I want to work towards that. Like, when somebody says sustaining or sustainability, I'm like, oh, sad face, you know? Like, yeah, we should do that. It's so sad that we're not even doing that. Where when, you know, we talk about thrivability, there's just something really energizing that says, oh, I want to be a part of that. Like, I know that there's some tough work that I'd have to do to get there, but I'm willing to do it because that's something worth doing. So that to me is the energy around thrivability. And the resilience movement is quite parallel and, if not overlapping, and also kind of responds to the sustainability piece, saying, you know, we need to create greater resilience. And I went to an event in San Francisco called Design for Resilience, where we had a lot of conversations about what that really means. And it's about creating that agility and adaptability to be responding to the world as it changes, which I think is really powerful and is a part of what I speak about when I talk about thrivability. So it does seem to be somewhat of a semantic difference. But if I say to you, would you like to thrive or would you like to be resilient?
Yeah.
One is So the one that makes your heart lean forward and go, how do I take action on that?
Yeah, I totally agree, actually. I'd been thinking about resilience for quite some time and came across the word thrivability and knew in some way that they were connected, but loved the more positive energy of it as opposed to resilience, which is about coping in a way. But, you know, how do we move beyond that at a personal level and a level of society as well, about just coping with change, but actually being more positive and saying, well, let's use that positively.
Right. And I like that, you know, the positiveness of it is compelling for people. However, every once in a while I come across, you know, some pragmatist who's like, come on, really? Like, we're so far from there. What are you going to do about that? Mm. And there's something in thriving where you can look at the environment and go, where is it thriving? And wherever you see it thriving, you also see things decomposing, that things become compost for other things to build upon. And so looking at the cycles of life, you know, it's not like let's paint a pretty utopian picture where everything turns out glorious and everything is always in the state of spring, you know, or summer. It's about how do we create a space that can truly thrive and that allows for some things to be decomposing, but from that, whatever breakdowns are present, there's new life that emerges.
Yeah. So that whole concept of emergence is really important.
Yes. And this piece about the breakdown and the breakthrough, somebody showed me a lovely diagram of like a sloping hill and going, you know, here's the signs of all the breakdowns that are happening. And there's some point at which another slope starts to rise. And before the breakdown actually hits that bottom line, the breakthroughs start to intersect. And it's like, well, how do you jump from the things that are breaking down onto the things that are breaking through? And we're at this amazing stage right now where there are things that are breaking through. And that's been growing for the last 5 years, and they're becoming much more visible. And so things like collaborative consumption, I would point to as a, here's a movement that's starting to break through, showing us a path towards something that's possible that can lead toward more thriving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to say more about that breakdown versus breakthrough? Explain the difference or the concept?
Yeah. Well, you know, here, let me give you a real example of what that looks like in daily practice. So I was doing a interview sort of like this for Tunnel Vision recently, and we had a ton of tech issues. You know, my sound wasn't working right, and we ended up having to switch to cell phones, and somebody else's phone wasn't working right. Somebody else on the call had bad background noise. And it was like, normally these calls have 5 people. And it hit such a point that it was like, should we just call the show? Like, let's not do it today. We'll do it another day. And I said, well, here's this opportunity to talk about breakdown and breakthrough. Like, yes, lots of things are going wrong. And we can sit on the call and have conversations about all these things that are going wrong and why they're a problem for us. Or we can say, well, what do we have? And what can we do with that? And so one of the people dropped off the call. Another one just kind of stayed quiet because they had so much background noise. And I stayed on with the third person, and we had a fantastic conversation. But it took that moment of intervention of saying, no, you know, we could break through this and have a generative conversation if we stop paying attention to the stuff that's not working.
Yeah, a bit like positive, what do they call it, you know, affirmative action or positive, yeah, so it's like a solutions, like a solutions focus.
It is solutions focus because it's not about being blind to the things that aren't working. Mm. It was totally acknowledging that we were having technical issues.
Yeah.
But it's about where do you want to put the majority of your attention and what do you want to build? What is that threshold by which you say it's time to give up versus, you know, we can do something with what we have?
Yeah, that's great. That's positive. So I'm wondering about your experience at the conference. I mean, we've talked to everyone else about, and obviously you had a large part to play in influencing everyone else and being a speaker, etc. But I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts about your experience as a participant of Gathering?
Yeah, it was such a magical space that it's hard to describe it. And, you know, I feel like I could easily slip into talking spiritually about this kind of space that was created through the people who felt drawn to that conversation and drawn to come together. There is something about, you know, the space in Melbourne and the invitation to this conversation that was just really inspiring, and the way people were willing to step into the conversation, because it was, you know, parts of it were a very improvisational flow to it, especially the last day where we were doing more open space, and people were so willing to step in and contribute and be a part of an evolving process. So I've gone to a lot of conferences, and I'm very opposed to conferences where there are a lot of talking heads and there's a glorification of the person at the front of the stage instead of the people who are in the room who have expertise of their own to contribute. And, you know, this conference has a wonderful blend of here's some inspiring things for us to respond to, and then lots of dialogue for people to get in and have traction. But again, I don't want to paint some, you know, perfect picture of, and we all came together and it was lovely. We did a dance and jumped over the rainbow, right? I mean, there were messy moments in that process for all of us. And that was the other thing that I found really inspiring was, you know, in my messy moments, and I witnessed in other people having messy moments, there was a willingness to claim, like, I'm in a mess right now, and I'm not going to let that become something that I'm projecting onto other people or onto the event or whatever. And so there was a realness, a humanness about people being there, and a level of awareness about having conversations and being responsible for conversations. And I found that really inspiring. There was also a great mix of people who were very on the ground traction. What work are we doing right now? And how are we going to get that work done? And people having conversations about how do we do this work and what does this look like? How can we be self-aware about it?
Yeah, so it wasn't sort of very vague. It seems to me that there is a lot of action going on with people doing things, and they were keen to sort of use the event to talk some more about the stuff that they're doing and move things forward.
Exactly. Exactly. And I feel like, you know, we generated something that's now living and continuing to move on. You know, there's already talk about the next event, and there's still conversation and this archive building, and, you know, something's been brought into being through this. And, you know, I'm just inspired and impressed by the people who are doing that work to continue to build what that is.
Yeah, I've spoken to David about that. He was on, I think, episode 5, and about the whole concept of it living and being, a movement rather than an event, which I think is quite rare as well. You said you've been to a lot of conferences where, you know, you go to a conference and you have a great time and learn lots of stuff and meet people, but things fall away very quickly afterwards, or can, if there's no energy put into, you know, building on that. Stuff that happened there, which I think is really important to continue that for people, to continue for them to talk about things and connect and continue the relationships, etc.
Yes, absolutely. And I really have to commend David's leadership on that, because he is not a leader that stands in the middle and says, to me, everybody to me, here's what you're going to do. He really opened a space by which other people could step forward and stand with him or in front of him to grow this. And I think whenever you do that as a form of leadership, you know, it's not about recruiting people. It's just about attracting the people who are eager to do and be involved. And so that was, I think, part of the unfolding of it into something living was, you know, his recruitment of people who believed in it enough that they could carry it forward. you know, when Jim Collins talks about level five leadership, you know, it's a flavor of that kind of level five leadership.
Yeah. I wasn't there, but certainly that feeling comes across from other people as well, that they felt the space was there for them to really contribute and take hold of things. I mean, Matt, I spoke with Matt Cooperider. We did an interview as well. And the same sort of feeling came through that, you know, there was space for him to step in and organise some things, and he's really taken a leadership role as well, just from being given the space to do so.
Yeah.
So what other concepts that arose out of gathering that are alive for you that have been valuable?
Oh, well, you know, John Hagel's smart moves, small moves smartly made is certainly, I'm not sure if it came from the conference because I was friends with John before the conference, but it was a strong theme at the event, and therefore it kind of deepened in my awareness. You know, what is the small thing that we can do that's insightful and informed and strategic that then becomes something large instead of starting from the, I want to achieve this big thing, you know, I want to see a thrivable world. It's like, what can I do today that can cascade into something interesting, and how do I create that cascade? So I found that really compelling. And the other thing that I found really, I don't know how explicit it was, but the space of community, the ability to like form community, especially a city community, in order to uplift everybody within that community. So since the event, I've been talking a lot about social ecosystem design, and I feel deeply informed by that experience of, you know, whether it was the hub space there that we worked at for the day, or the space that we had the other event at, and the way of kind of networking within the city that happened, I found that really powerful.
Do you want to say a little bit more about what do you mean by social ecosystem design?
Yeah, well, okay. I feel really emergent in having a conversation about it because it's something that, like I said, has been triggered for me since then, and my searches on it aren't really showing up very much. But, you know, I've worked in online community development for a while, and what I'm talking about is bigger than that, right? It's not just about designing like an online space or even an in-person space where people can interact with each other. It's about that existing within a larger sphere. So let's say I want to start a company, and you know, I can come up with my own business plan, and maybe I do the competitive analysis, you know, who's against me. But how many people do the cooperative analysis? Like, I'm existing within an ecosystem. I'm putting this organization within an ecosystem. Who is already within that ecosystem that's going to enable me to do well? And who can I support by being in that space that's going to, again, come back and later support me? So how do I interact with that environment that I'm within in a way that allows me to do better? And I think of business design that are examples of this would be something like Twitter. So Twitter creates this field where people can be doing their microblogging. But within that field, there's opportunities for people to start their businesses. And so they create a large space that lots of people can be doing things within. And that pulls a bunch of people into the space because these other people are starting their businesses, and therefore they become the advocates for that space, and they open that conversation. And so that forms this ecosystem of lots of people having different businesses or having their businesses intersect with that. And then Twitter, you know, struggles to find their little place on where they're going to take their tax on having created that field. So I think that is one of the ways that social ecosystem design is being done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the examples of that.
Yeah, so it's really, I guess, understanding the effects of, you know, and the importance of networks and designing for that in that sense, rather than designing mechanistically, that perhaps, as you're saying, with the business, it's thinking about the networks when you're designing it rather than just thinking about the individual process.
Right, right. And I can't help but think that way because my background is studying network theory. So I tend to see the world through that lens.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's. I think it's really important, and people are recognizing that more and more, obviously, through, you know, the internet and things, we are becoming more connected.
Yes.
So it's how do you work with that, I guess, is what you're talking about.
Yes, and that starts to get into things like game dynamics and currency design. It's like, how do you incentivize flows within that field? And you want to make sure that you've got stuff flowing out to the people that are having stuff flow back to you in a way that enables you to make sure that that continues to happen.
Yeah.
Right. And that might not always be monetary. Like, you know, my, in a case where it's monetary, it's like I'm dealing with my suppliers and obviously I'm giving them money and that incentivizes them to give me the things that I need in order to build what I do. But there's also, you know, in a social ecosystem, like, a city or whatever, there's lots of spaces where there's a non-monetary exchange. And it's like what helps people show up in those spaces in order to take the actions that grow the community.
Yeah, really important stuff to grapple with, I think. And I'll be really interested to sort of see where you take it. Is this part of the book?
This is not part of the book. It came together after I had already outlined and written most of the book. So it feels like the kernel of the next story.
Okay, nice. Well, I'll look forward to hearing that story and watching it evolve.
I hope that you will play with me and help me figure it out.
Yeah. So while we're on the topic of your book, I was going to ask you, you know, one of the questions I've been asking people, what's next for them? Obviously, the book, you're writing a book. That's a fairly big project for you.
Yes. Yes. And last year I did a collaborative book, which was, you know, I got other people to contribute the writing. This year I'm actually doing the writing myself, which I found is much harder and less fun. but that book should be finished very soon. It's called Breakthroughs for a World That Works.
Okay. And
it talks about some of the things that I'm speaking about, but doesn't frame it as social ecosystem design. So once I finish that, I'm going to go back to collaboratively producing information. There are several areas, subsets of areas within Thrivability that I want to bring attention, both to people who are doing fantastic work in that space that others who are trying to build a thrivable world would benefit from. And I want to convene conversations around that and then produce small little booklets that people can play with that give, here's some ways to practice these things. Here's the key takeaways. You know, you don't have to go study the whole field of leadership development. You know, here's just the emerging trends that are important for generating a more thrivable world. That would be an example.
Awesome. So the process for writing the book, you're a natural collaborator, so it's been interesting for you to be fairly introspective in writing the book. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, you know, I found it's just a different level of collaboration because what I'm trying to do is pull together a bunch of threads from very different domains, whether that's like understanding complex adaptive systems or understanding, you know, breakthroughs in behavioral economics. It's like I'm taking these threads that exist in the world and collaborating with them and pulling together the story about, you know, this thrivable world. But I just find the immediacy of an alive conversation where I don't know what's going to happen next to be much more compelling. You know, what are we co-creating together? It just feels a lot more alive to me.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how you can, I guess, the conversation that the book then creates,
yeah.
You know, in terms of that, it's the message, but it's one way at the moment. But once it's published and people are reading it, I'm sure that we'll create a different level of interaction and collaboration.
Oh, I hope so.
I'm sure it will.
But I'll have a little bit of that anxious moment that I had at Gathering 11 of, and how are they going to respond?
Yeah.
I haven't been able to track their facial expressions through the writing of this.
That's true. You won't get that immediate feedback. I'm sure it'll be positive. I'm sure that based on even reading the outline, it looks really interesting, some of the stuff that you're writing about.
Thank you. I hope it's useful to people.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be.
Thank you.
I'm sort of at a bit of a dead end. so, you know, reflecting on messy moments, I've just had one of my own. I didn't know what to ask you next. Have you got anything that that we haven't covered that you thought? Beg your pardon?
Can we all be allowed to be human like that?
Yeah, go on. Definitely, we should all be. We are all human.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to raise or you would like to ask me?
I would love to know what sparked you to start this podcast and what wisdom you're garnering from having these conversations, like not from any individual conversation, but the collection of them.
Yeah, so my motivation was twofold. One was a very selfish motivation. I wasn't able to attend Gathering. I was working on over the weekend that Gathering was held. So one of my motivations was just to find out what happened. I was really interested in the event, and I really wanted to talk to people and find out what happened and, you know, what they thought about it, how they liked it, etc. And I guess the other motivation was sparked by the anthology project, or the almanac project, which it was first called. You know, when that was mentioned, I was looking, I thought, well, that would be a great way to contribute to the project, to have a resource, a bunch of podcasts from people that attended and that I could talk to. So I killed two birds with one stone, so to speak.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, that was the motivation. What have I learned? Matt actually suggested that I write a blog post on it at the end, as a way of sort of action learning, which I will do. But as a midpoint review, what have I learned? It's really, as you were just saying, there's lots of really sort of interesting threads that are quite distinct. So there's definitely some patterns and threads of. So I can get a real sense of what happened. You know, John Hagel's stuff about small things comes up quite a lot. A number of conversations have been around method, facilitation method, and opening space and how that contributes to people's experience and the way that the event's facilitated. Obviously, your concept of thrivability is something that people have talked about a lot. And I guess the other thing that comes through is that real sense of community or ongoing relationships and people working on some really cool stuff as a result of, not as a result, but yeah, as part of it. It's been informed. People's work's been informed by what's happened at Gathering, and then it's sort of motivated them to do more stuff or to do stuff differently or to continue doing something. So, yeah, that's a really important part of it, I think. And, yeah, so it's been an interesting process. And I guess another part of that is, for me, producing a series of podcasts, which I'll write about that more, because that's been an interesting learning experience as well. Mm. So actually producing a series and going through the mechanics or the motion of doing that from a technical perspective, but also from a perspective of me contacting people and inviting them and what works and what doesn't. Mm. So yeah, it's definitely been very interesting. And I just love talking to people and love interviewing people and hearing their stories. So, that's been really great.
Yeah. There's this new word that's being bandied about in some of the future future studies people's conversations called senience, which is about brilliance isn't something that usually, you know, there's kind of this myth of the lone genius creates something. And what we find if we look in history is usually that there's a community of people, and it's, you know, conversation after conversation and the encouragement and the resources of the whole community that kind of pull together to create something fantastic.
Yeah.
And there are certain times in history when you can see that it's the entire community that's doing it. And there are other times when it's not quite as clear. And just being in Melbourne, I just have the sense of there's a community there, that everyone within the community becomes more brilliant by having been connected into that community. And there's a generative energy there. And I want to go back. Like, I want to move there. It's like one of my top three cities in the world now. And it's partly because of that vibe that's in the space. It's really incredible. And so I'm jealous that you're there.
Well, I think now you've mentioned that, I think we're going to have to create the hashtag come back to Melbourne. And I'm going to write that down. So I remember, come back to Melbourne. Because you mentioned at the start of the show that it was come to Melbourne. So now we're going to start a whole campaign to come back to Melbourne. For those of you
I mean, my one concern is, well, how many people need to come from outside? Because there's so much wisdom in the circle already that's there. And so, I mean, it was great for me. I loved coming. But, you know, what do you need from outside? You know, there's this funny thing I've noticed with conferences. It's like you never source somebody who's local to be your lead speaker. Like, you always have to bring them in from somewhere else as if they have some other authority that the people who are present don't. And I just think that's misleading. It's like, no, you guys have so much brilliance there. I mean, I would love to come back and, you know, given a restricted budget and resources, like, do that really carefully and focus on the real brilliance that's there. And so, you know, if there's, you know, energy to create another event, like, I want the light to be shined on the people who have taken something from Gathering 11 and done something with it, and have them be the headliners for Gathering 12, you know?
Yeah, that'd be awesome to sort of, it would really tie the thread together between the two. And, it is interesting, isn't it? I think people do it because, obviously, they're trying to attract people to come to their conference, so I don't think it's necessarily an expert thing, but if you've got someone coming from overseas, it's a real draw card as well, I think. Because how many, they're not going to get the opportunity to go somewhere else to see that person speak necessarily.
Right, not going to be there next week.
You are coming back to Melbourne, was that?
I would absolutely love to come back to Melbourne.
Okay, the campaign started to get you back to Melbourne.
Mm.
All right. Jean Russell, thanks once again for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.